Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I'm joined by Sam Abasaki. Sam Abasaki, who I like to think of as the gun smuggler of the team, because he has he has these glasses, and I'm like, Sam looks like a librarian. He looks like, you know, a man in a lab coat doing some science, but he's secretly ripped Sam Abasaki.
I'm not even ripped no more, man. I can't even take that title anymore. It's sad. This lockdown has shredded me of everything that I worked for. So yeah, you gotta remove that title. But thanks for the, you know, the smuggler and the the teacher and that, because I actually love these glasses, to be fair.
Well, one of my best friends, like, he was always known among our group as like surprisingly ripped Paul. Because like, he every now and then, like, we'd go to the beach and Paul would like whip his shirt off and we were like, what are you doing? Like, like, you're a nerd, you're not meant to be this hench.
That is so funny. They don't know about the sessions that we used to have in gym, though. Remember that time where I tried to go with you to the gym and they just said, well, this isn't your path, so
yeah, you took my card to the gym.
They were like, are you Patrick Van Straten? And I said, yeah.
I can't believe that. I can't believe we tried that. Like, they were not having it at all. And then like the next week they were like, so like this guy came and he tried to use your card. Do you know anything about that? And I was like, what? Oh, you know what? Like, I think he got my card confused with his card. Like, don't worry about it. And they were kind of like, like, we know, but we're gonna pretend we don't know.
That was so funny, man. I'm never doing that again. It's because your gym is so bougie. In my gym, all you need is a code. Your gym, you need a flipping code. Your picture, it scans. Your face comes up and everything. Like, I had to be like, yeah, this is. I'm Patrick Van Straten.
See, now I would just kill to go to any gym now, man. Like, I'm so bored of home workouts. I'm so bored of like rolling out a yoga mat and like doing like squats and press ups in the same room.
Yeah, it is long. I think we've got a month left until we can go back to the gym, and then we go again. No days off. All the slogans are coming out.
Yeah, it's just like pure like bikini body for Sam Abasaki. That's what's happened.
We gotta go for it, man.
Oh well, I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, I am counting down the days. But one of the things kind of making things tolerable at the moment, I imagine for you, is that Chelsea are kind of good again. I mean, a bit of a disappointing weekend for Chelsea. Like, drawing 0-0 with Leeds, obviously Man United won, Leicester won. A little bit disappointing, though, could have been worse. But Thomas Tuchel seems already to have made such a difference at Stamford Bridge. I've got some stats here. He's taken charge of 12 matches. I'm only going to count 11 because one was against Barnsley, I think, in the FA Cup. No one cares. But 11 matches in the league and Champions League. He's won 8 and no losses. At all. Like, I mean, fixture list has been pretty good. Like, you had Atleti away, you had Spurs, but really I think the only tough fixture in there was Liverpool, and it was quite a good time to play Liverpool. But the defence has been out of this world. 2 goals conceded in 11 proper matches. Attack's still a little bit of a work in progress. So I wanted to ask you, what's your take on the team so far? What are you seeing? What's different in the style, and where do you think the real strengths are right now?
I think Tuchel has done amazing, and I think he shocked a lot of Chelsea fans, to be honest, because when he came in, I was one of those fans that didn't really know too much about him. Obviously, he came from Dortmund, came from PSG. When a manager goes to PSG, you always think that they're automatically supposed to win. And obviously, with the squad that he had, Neymar and Mbappe, you think that it's a given. But when he came in, I was like, okay, he's taken over a legend. He's got a... basically win don't laugh,
taken over a legend. This is like the other week when Chelsea were like, oh, we're celebrating our birthday today, and I was just like, oh, 17 today, like, congratulations.
chill out man, respect us. Anyway, he took over a legend, and obviously that's a hard task for anyone, and he came in, and I think from the first press conference where he articulated so well what he's going to do with the squad, the problems that he had in previous roles, the problems that he's going to try and fix within himself as well as a manager. Obviously, a lot of people are saying he's had a few issues with the board, where he goes. And I think him getting an 18-month contract kind of made him put into perspective his career and obviously the achievements that he's achieved, but at the same time, the type of manager people are perceiving him as like this volatile, he gets after a certain amount of time, he gets angry and all of these things. I think he's come in and he tried to right all of those wrongs. And within the squad, you can kind of see that his energy that he has on the touchline, the tactics that he's had in previous clubs, he's implanted into this team. But at the same time, he's taken like a type of care with each player. I know that when he first came in, he spoke to each individual player, told them what he wants from them, what he's trying to bring to the squad. Obviously, there was a lot of players that were senior players that were on the fringes, so he had to kind of turn them around. With his first game against Wolves, he brought a lot of them in because obviously those are the players that he knew of. But I think everyone's responded so well, like the Rudigers, the Christiansens, even Aspie to a certain extent. Aspie obviously was playing because he's just Mr. Consistent, but Christiansen and Rudiger, they were the ghosts of the Chelsea team. A lot of Chelsea fans were saying, are they going to leave this summer? Should they have left in January? Should they have left in the summer? And I can't lie, I was one of those fans, you know what I mean? I was saying that might have to be the case, because when you're not seeing certain players play, you're seeing the fact that when Christiansen or Rudiger did come into the team, they wasn't doing that well as well. But he's turned, especially the defence, he's turned them around. He's given them a confidence that I didn't even believe Christiansen had anymore specifically. Mm. Like, now he's looking like a man that we can build our defence around. Do you get what I'm saying? Because he's still young. Rudiger's, what, 27, 28? Yeah, he was 28 the other day. Christiansen is still young. I think they want him to sign a new contract as well. Those conversations were never happening before. So it's quite remarkable, like, the job that he's done. But also in terms of the whole team, I think people kind of forgot that we had a lot of young players, especially in the front line. Like, that's what one thing that Lampard done quite well. He embedded a lot of the youngsters from the Chelsea Academy in, and some of the players that we got in, like Havertz, Werner, young players, Chilwell, young players. And if you don't have a specific philosophy, it's hard for everyone to buy into it. And I think that's one thing that Lampard struggled with, because he had so much to do, and when things were going well, it was all right. Like, everything was all right for him. But when things started going bad, it's like you can kind of see where the cracks had come in and why these players weren't performing. But now Tuchel has a clear philosophy. He wants to counter press. He wants to win the ball back early. He wants to play it through the middle as much as he plays it out wide with the wing backs. And I think that just that interchanging in style has suited our side, because we've got so many players and we've got a lot of players that do different things. And for some managers, that might be a struggle. But for Tuchel, he's just, obviously he's not mastered it yet, because we can't really say how well he's done so far, because obviously, like you said, the running wasn't that tough. We had a few games where he pulled out good results against Atletico Madrid, against Liverpool. But next season's going to be the big challenge. Like, can you mount a challenge against the cities? And Liverpool are definitely going to come back. And I think with this squad, he's kind of proving slowly but surely that he can. We've got a lot of players that Havertz, people were counting them out so much. They were saying that he's not going to be the player that we thought he was going to be. Werner, obviously, he's not banging in right now, but he's putting in a lot of work. And Hudson-Odoi, a lot of conversation was going on around him, and he's doing his thing as well. So I'm just happy at the fact that he's able to show the quality that a lot of Chelsea fans believed was in the squad, but just wasn't shining as much before he came. So yeah, man, I'm happy with the squad. So it's just annoying that our attack isn't banging as much as it should. I think he's still kind of doing, he was doing an audit before the Atletico Madrid game. I feel like he was interchanging the team a lot. He was giving a lot of people chances to play in the team. And you can kind of see slowly but surely who he trusts, who has the most impact in the system. And that's good for us, because then there's no confusion as to, oh, why is this person not playing? Why is this person not playing? Because he's playing the Pulisic's, he's playing the ZX. They might not be doing as well, but then when you see the Hudson-Odois, you see the Mounts playing together, you see them doing well. So he's given people less reason to have those conversations. So yeah, man, I proper feel Tuchel. And he's a good talker as well, and he's an honest talker. So it's always good to have that, like, transparency from, like, a manager-fan perspective.
Mm. Well, I mean, there are a few things that I kind of want to pick up there. The first thing, I think, is that you were talking about the system. And I think we're already seeing, like, some clear stylistic stuff going on here, right? So, like, I looked at since Tuchel came in, and only Leeds have been a more aggressive pressing side than Chelsea since that happened. So we're already seeing that, which was something we expected. But yeah. And I know you said the attack isn't quite functioning right now, but the defence is out of this world. Like, at the moment, they're giving about 0.4 expected goals a game and fewer shots than Man City, which is wild. That's about half the XG that Man City allow a game. Like, this is super elite. And the nice thing about this, from a Tuchel perspective, is that Tuchel's history is not of being a particularly great defensive coach. Like, what he's been historically is an amazing attacking coach. So you look at this and you think, wow, as a foundation for him to build an attack on, this is really, really promising. I think it's really interesting as well what you said about him kind of articulating, like, his ideas about players. You know, we saw this recently where he was talking about Kai Havertz and, like, how he conceives of Kai Havertz as a player, where he was like, well, you know, he's kind of, like, dropping into this nine role and, like, he's basically a nine with all these extra skills. And it seemed like there was going to be some consistency there. So who do you think is already establishing themselves as a favourite under Tuchel? And who do you think is maybe a little bit on the way out? Like, because right now, I think you're right. Like, it seems like he's open to pretty much everyone in the squad. But he clearly is already finding people that he trusts.
Yeah, I think going from the defence up here, I think in the defence, obviously, Aspie, he loves Aspie. He's always loved Aspie. I think he tried to sign him a few times. Christensen, he's tried to sign our whole back three before while he was at other clubs. So it kind of makes sense why he's playing them. But I think Christensen especially was someone that might have shocked him, but is someone that shocked him in a good way, in a sense where he now trusts him, because Thiago Silva was probably a blessing in disguise for Christensen, because now he can actually, he's built his confidence. You can see he's playing with such a, like, I'm so happy for him. Like, you know those players that you're like, thank you, finally. Like, I remember specifically in the Arsenal-Chelsea Cup final when Christensen had that clash with Bellerin, and I was fuming. Like, I was one of those guys who was saying, like, you're a centre-back. Like, you're supposed to go through him, get back up, and then make those challenges behind. But I think that kind of summed up Christensen's period before Tuchel came in. He just wasn't as sure of himself as he is now. Now he's going against some of the best strikers. He's dominant. He's just proving that if you give me a chance and you give me a run of games, that I can be someone that you can trust. But I think in the back three, he trusts them all. I think Zuma's going to struggle a little bit just because of the fact that he can't play in that the middle. He can't play in the middle of the back three, because he's not as gifted on the ball as Christensen. Mm. And on the right or left side, I think he just prefers Rudiger and Aspilicueta. In terms of the midfield, I think he loves Jorginho, Kovacic and Kante all the same, to be honest. I think it's just dependent on the game. Like, I think he was honest with Gilmore as well, said that you're a quality player, but in terms of the experience and in terms of the senior players, you're going to be fourth. And I think that's just good to be honest with a player like that. People are saying maybe he could have gone out and learned, maybe, but at the same time, he could also learn, and he is very young. So I think that experience learning in that system is a good thing as well, because that means that Tuchel believes that you can play this system, but just not yet. Do you get what I'm saying? But the wing backs, I think he likes James. He loves Hudson-Odoi in that wing back position. I think he loves him in that wing back position more than a bit further forward. I think he just loves Hudson-Odoi in general, but I think he likes his attacking output when he's playing wing back. On the left side, it's funny because I feel like
Alonso.
Chilwell and Alonso, they do different things. So I feel like he appreciates Alonso for his attacking output, but in terms of defending, he just knows that that's just not his strongest side. But Chilwell's more of an all-rounder, but he's just not as decisive as Alonso. So I think that left side is probably an area that he might think of improving in the summer. I think Emerson doesn't have a chance in this squad, unfortunately. I think, obviously, he's not played a game. I don't think he started a game under Tuchel. And I think a few teams are in for him, are looking to be in for him this summer. So I think that would make sense to cut ties.
So when you say, like, that he might strengthen that side in the summer, there are two questions there. Like, one, do you think he'll stick with a three at the back and look for a left wing back? And two, you think that they might go in for another player of that kind, even having spent, you know, 50 mil on Chilwell a year ago?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a tough one because obviously they spent that money on Chilwell, but at the same time, that's not a player that Tuchel bought. You get what I'm saying? And it depends on his system. Like if he does change his system and then Chilwell does thrive, then I'd understand. But if I'm just talking about the system that I've seen, and in terms of the system that I've seen, Alonso's been good enough, but he's not the best. You get what I'm saying? Chilwell's been good enough, but he's not the best. He's better at left back. So if he does revert back to a back four, then maybe we'll see more of Chilwell in that team, and maybe we won't go for someone. We most probably will prioritise other areas. But in terms of that system, the back three with the two wing backs, if he does continue, then I think he will look to strengthen it. But in terms of the front line, I think he loves Mason Mount. A lot of people questioned whether Mount would be one of those players that would see the bench a lot more because he was Lampard's son, apparently, and all of this stuff. But Mason has literally proven that he's a quality player and he's just going to continue improving. I think he's kind of, obviously he came in for, people said that he came in for that German connection, which does make sense with Havertz and Werner being like the big money signings of the summer. And I think he does love them both, but he's going to be hard on both of them because of that. Do you get what I'm saying? And I think you kind of got that, a hint of that in the game against Everton when he just blasted Werner for just chilling on the left when he was playing through the middle, and he was just like, bro, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing there? And then I think after he went back into the middle, we scored like a few minutes after. So it's like when these things happen and you see the tactics work, it's like, okay, cool, he's being fair on me, or it all makes sense. I think he loves, yeah, like I said, he loves Hudson-Odoi. I think he likes Giroud. I think all managers will love Giroud, to be honest, because he knows what he's good at and he does what he's good at whenever he plays. It's just dependent on the game. Don't think he will be here for much longer in a sense, but...
Sure, yeah. What do you think about...
I think...
Sorry, man. What do you think about Pulisic and Ziyech, though? Because you mentioned them earlier. You were like, they're playing, but Pulisic has only had about 200 minutes out of about 900 available since Tuchel came in. Ziyech, yeah, I think, has played about a third of the minutes. What do you think is going on there? I mean, obviously there are rumours that Pulisic could leave in the summer. That would seem very odd. I don't really see that happening. But do you think that Chelsea are going to look to sell some of these guys in the front line? And do you think that the rumours about, you know, going for a striker like Haaland are real or just paper talk?
I actually don't think that the rumours for Pulisic or any of our front players are true, to be honest. I think that's always going to happen when you're winning and certain players aren't getting minutes. Like, that always happens. But I think it's different for a side like Chelsea because that's never really been something that we've had. Like, we've never had the squad depth that we've had right now. Like, for the Cities and the Bayern Munichs and, like, the top teams, you will see quality players on the bench, but because they're such a quality team, it's like, okay, it makes sense. Do you get what I'm saying? It makes sense that they can come in and out of the side or whatever. I think that's what Chelsea are leading towards. Like, we're trying to build that team in a sense where someone can replace someone. If someone's injured, you've got the same quality on the bench. I think it's just unfortunate that Pulisic knew Tuchel. Tuchel's the one that gave Pulisic his chance at Dortmund. And like he said, he knows that he was good off of the bench. So he's kind of, his familiarity is what's kind of given him his situation right now. But at the same time, he came back from injury, and you don't want to force him back into it because he's actually injury prone at such a young age. So yeah, I think that's what it is for Pulisic. But in terms of Ziyech gets his chances here and there. It's just whether he can take it or not, and whether he can, like, you see little spurts of what he's good at and how good he is and how good he can be. So I feel like if he has another summer and he goes into next season understanding what the Premier League is like, you never know what he can achieve next season. I think people also forget that this is his first season in the Premier League. It's not an easy league to get into, especially the type of player he is as well. So I think just give all these players a chance, to be honest, and time.
Okay. Well, I mean, they've got a little bit of an easier run now for a few fixtures. Got West Brom up, got Palace, got Brighton, got Fulham. I think it's Sheffield United in the FA Cup as well, which is pretty good. End of the season, a bit tougher. City, Arsenal, Leicester, Villa. But given that the FA Cup looks like an easy draw, given that you're favoured to go through in the Champions League, and given that run in the Premier League, what does a good end of the season look like for Chelsea? Like, what would you be happy with? And what would you hope for?
I'm thinking, like, this is from what I've seen from the squad, innit? We're getting better. Stop laughing.
I know where this is going, Sam. I know where this is going.
No, I'm actually going to be quite honest here. I'm just going to say, honestly, I just want top four, hopefully the FA Cup, and a good run in the Champions League.
Okay.
Like, that would be a good end of season for me, especially the way the season started. We started well, we had a bad period. If we end well, I think going into next season, that would be a good place to start from. But yeah, anything can happen, man. I think we're lucky as well that every team below us that was in close proximity actually lost. Like West Ham lost, Everton lost, Spurs lost as well. So yeah, man, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful we can get top four. But top four is the priority. Top four is the priority. FA Cup trophy would be great. You know, Tuchel first season, that would be amazing. And a good run. I want us to you know, beat Atletico and see where we can go to Champions League.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Well, Sam, you mentioned just then that Spurs also lost this weekend. And we have to talk about the North London derby because it's all been kicking off today. Like, Jermaine Genius has had a breakdown, like, on Match of the Day. Everybody's crying about it. But to be honest, it was a pretty uncompetitive North London derby. Like, Tottenham were very, very negative. Obviously took the lead through that absolutely outrageous Rabona nutmeg from Eric Lamella, which even I, as an Arsenal fan, was like,
You had to clap for him. No one could see that goal and say, oh, I hate... That was one of the maddest goals I've seen in a long time. And the funniest thing is, it's the fact that he's so left-footed. Like, he can't use his right foot. That's why he has to Rabona to get his left foot involved. Like, it's mad.
Yeah, I just thought it was like a side foot finish at first. And then I was like, oh no, it's Lamella. And everyone was going so wild that I was like, what's happened? And then they showed the replay and I was like, oh great, more of this.
Through his legs.
One shot they had in the first half though, Sam. One shot. Arsenal had 10. And obviously at the end of the first half, managed to equalise through that deflected effort from Martin Odegaard. The first half, I thought, real problems down that flank of Doherty and Bale. But to me, it just seemed like it was a really, as I said, like a very negative approach to the game, given the lineup. Mm. Like, the lineup seemed quite attacking, but then that wasn't how it worked out.
Yeah, it looked like it. When I looked at the lineup, I was like, yeah, this is going to be men versus boys. You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing Bell's hitting again, like Son, Kane's involved. Obviously, they said he might not play because of his injury, but he played. Højbjerg and Ndombele, baller. You think that this Reguilón starting as well, you think that it was going to be all good. But at the same time, if you then look into the matchups, like you said, on that right side, Doherty and Bell, mate. I could get past these, man. If I tapped it past Doherty, I promise you I could get past him. Because what Tierney done, that little hezzy that he loves doing, that he literally, it works every time, Doherty could not deal with it. And Bale was just like, well, that's your problem, mate. You know what I mean? I'm here to attack. Like, I know Doherty, he was having nightmares about that because he's not really had a good time since he's been at Spurs. And I think he's more of a victim of the fact that the Wolf system made him look very good, innit? And he might just be in over his head at Spurs because I've genuinely not seen him have a good game. And like, when I watch him, I get frustrated. Like, and I don't even support Spurs. So I'm imagining how other Spurs think when they see him play. And it's like, okay, if Doherty's not playing, we're going to have to play Ori. And then that's like, it's the worst evil. Like, which one would you prefer? You know what I mean? But yeah, man, they did not come into this game thinking, I don't even know, because you'd think that Spurs would come into that game guns blazing, yeah, obviously I think the first period of the game kind of like threw them off in a sense. I don't even know if it threw them off because you're used to Arsenal having possession. But with Kane being almost injured and shouldn't have played, to be honest, but then the Son injury,
yeah,
that came from the fact that he hadn't even had to do a sprint in the first like 15 minutes. Do you get what I'm saying? And then that was the sprint. Obviously, it's cold. You're not really into the game. And then you sprint and then you pull up and then you're injured. And then you bring on this rogue Lamella that just is just on fighting anyone. Like, he just wants to fight people. Like,
he is one of the most aggressive players I've ever seen. Like, when he first came to the league, people were like, I think because he's kind of quite elegant, like, people were like, were sleeping on how violent he is. And time, like, people have gradually got an appreciation for what a snide bastard he is. He's so aggressive.
And it's just like, sometimes I look at his challenges, I'm just like, bro, you could have just won that by sticking your leg in. Like, you don't have to slide or have your studs up or even use your arms. Like, the way he got sent off, like, Mourinho normally backs players in a sense when they're like aggressive or whatever, but even him, he was looking at him like, bro, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, what are you actually doing? I don't think they weren't losing at that point. But were they losing at that point? When Lamella got sent off?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think they were. Yeah, they were. They were losing. And it's just like, bro, like, think about it a little. He just doesn't have a middle ground. It's just either he just is mad aggressive and he plays all right, or he's just not in the game at all. So he needs to find that middle ground to be effective, man.
But it was just like, that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, a couple of the decisions, because that's kind of where the debate's been, right? So obviously Arsenal ended up going ahead and ultimately winning through that penalty, and then Lamella got sent off. And while Spurs had a little bit of a rally at the end, but I thought that was mostly Arsenal just got really rattled for some reason and couldn't keep the ball. Yeah. Like, I was kind of like, the Lamella thing I'm not that sympathetic about, because I think you're on a yellow, you know not to hand someone off in the face. Like, it's silly.
Literally.
It is silly. And like, and also, though, to be honest, I was looking at it and I was like, I felt that Kane had two or three challenges which were worse than anything Lamella did in the whole match.
You see, Kane gets away with everything.
Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable.
I don't think the challenge on Gabriel was like a red card yet, but at the same time, that challenge is dangerous,
definitely,
that you have to call it out. Yeah, like, you have to give him a card and say, don't do this again, because he gets away with too much. And I understand, he might be England's golden boy and all of this stuff, but at the same time, you can't let players get away with dangerous things like that. It's not like he's challenging and almost winning the ball and that. He literally, Gabriel, the way his body, when you see it in slow motion, his body was in such a position that it could have ended up so much worse.
Yeah, he could have dislocated his shoulder or something.
Like, easily. And Kane just runs off. And obviously, he was frustrated, but mate, don't play when you're injured, bro. Don't play when you're hurting and you can barely run, you can barely move. Like, just stop doing that stuff, because you're more of a detriment to your team than you are. Like, obviously, you had that chance in the final few minutes, but mate, come on. You don't have to. That's not, like, save yourself. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Maybe the professional, all of this, die for the badge, all of that, North London derby.
Yeah, though, yeah, I was glad he was out. I was glad he was on the pitch to watch Spurs lose. you know, I was like, I'm really glad you're here for this, Harry Kane. Because if he hadn't played, you know, every Spurs fan would have been like, well, we didn't have Kane. And so I was glad that Kane. I was glad that Kane was there and did nothing. but I don't know, like, the penalty was a really weird one, because that seems to be a decision.
Soft.
I didn't even look at it like that seriously, because when it happened, I was like, that's a penalty. And then I half watched the replay and I was like, that's a penalty. And then, like, I kind of woke up this morning and everyone was debating it, and I thought, what did I miss? And I rewatched it and I was like, I get that Lacazette kind of kicked Sanchez, but I also think that if this were Kane instead of Lacazette, and it was like David Luiz instead of Sanchez, no one would be saying it wasn't a penalty. They'd be like, that
100.
It's silly to do.
Yeah, 100%. But it's one of them ones. I don't really like seeing those penalty decisions, to be fair. Like, Lacazette, if anything, obviously they were speaking about him screaming and rolling on the floor like the week before, which he does a lot. And it's like, I think that was one of those situations, again, where he missed the ball when he really should have made contact. And then because Sanchez is so erratic, he just made it look like a terrible challenge. Like, and you don't give the referee any option when it just looks that bad, especially from the angle the ref was at, innit? Like, when you look at different angles, it's like, oh, maybe he didn't touch him, or maybe he miskicked the ball, whatever. But at the same time, at full motion, it looks terrible.
Yeah.
So you're not really giving the referee a choice. But yeah, it was kind of soft, but I don't think, like, I'm not, like, torn up about it, because at the end of the day, like you said, if it was a Kane, or if it happened to Werner and he got the decision, I'll be arguing like they deserved it, you know what I mean? So, yeah, man.
Yeah, I think whenever your legs are just flailing around, like, in the air, in the box, it's like you can't really cry if a penalty gets given. Like, yeah, like, we have them given against us plenty of time. Like, it doesn't... And I don't know, I was just kind of like... It was just... I don't know, it was just a strange one to me. Like, I didn't really understand what the issue was. But really, really good penalty from Lacazette to put it in. I mean, and ultimately at the end, like, yeah, there was a little rally late on, but Spurs still ended up with 6 shots total, which is horrific, really. And I mean, Mourinho obviously comes out after the game, and you've kind of got to complain about the decisions. You know, he's got to complain, or at least he has to. Complains about the penalty, complains a little bit about the red, but not that much. But what do you make of the fact that he set up so conservatively in this game? Like, I mean, what do you make of this? Because especially, like, they were on a good run. Like, I think they scored 4 goals in, like, 3 of the last 4 games or something. And it just seems like that gradually this has... After that early season thing of, like, oh, he's playing really aggressively and they're scoring loads of goals, it just... Yeah. All the goodwill has gone, and it's kind of hard to work out what this Spurs side is meant to be.
Yeah, I think I saw a stat where I think he hasn't won his last a few games against, like, the top 10 sides or top 6 sides or whatever. But at the same time, I don't know if I necessarily blame Mourinho. Like, watching that game, it just seemed like the energy was sapped from somewhere. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, normally, well, I don't watch Spurs a lot, but when I do watch them, especially in previous weeks, yeah, they've had an energy about them where it's like, okay, cool, that you can tell that they want this game. In that game, maybe it's the fact that Kane was injured, or Son got taken off early. Bell was not really known for his running. You have Ndombele in a deeper position, even though he was playing there before. I feel like they could have switched up the team a little bit, because I just don't see how you could play. It's like you've got to see the matchups in the game, innit? And for me, when you're seeing one side lacking so much energy and aggression in a sense, and you're seeing Tierney as one of the better players in the Arsenal side. Obviously, it's not a one-man team, but at the same time, he created a lot. He had, like, one of the highest positions in the first half for an Arsenal player. And it's like, these are things that he's been doing. It's not something that you can be shocked of. Do you get what I'm saying? It's something that you should plan for. But I don't think he planned for that. So maybe Mourinho does get the blame for that. But at the same time, you're playing on the pitch, like, Bale, you're playing, you're seeing Tierney run past him, you go grab him. Do you get what I'm saying? I think Spurs are just a weird team, to be fair. Like, you never really know what to expect from Spurs, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care how well they do, what their seventh in it. Like, the only thing is, I don't care about Spurs, but I love Mourinho in it. So I would love it if he won a trophy there, yeah. Just because I love Mourinho that much. I just love Mourinho.
Oh, my God, like, Sam.
I honestly, he's one of the... I think he is the best personality in football.
And still, me, I now?
Like, yeah. I don't think anyone has taken that crown. I don't think anyone's taken that crown off him. Him being at Spurs is just adding to his story, to be honest, because now it's a different situation. So if he does get that trophy, he can already say that he scored the most goals with them when everyone said that he's played negative football. And then if he wins the trophy, he can say, these are the things that I've done for you, so don't chat on my name. Respect me. And that's what I'm here for, the headline, like the agendas, isn't it? So, yeah, man. But Spurs are weird.
I want him to retire, never having won another trophy. I can't wait. I was absolutely delighted with this. And the fact that he was annoyed about the penalty, like, just, like, made it even better. I was like, this man has been getting decisions his way for 20 years. Shut up. Like, it was so good. Yeah, so I don't know.
What are you saying? What are you saying for the Aubameyang situation, though? Because obviously he wasn't in, they say, disciplinary reasons. apparently he was late again, and he's been late for the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Do you reckon he was right to be on the bench, or if he was disciplinary reason, should he have even been in the squad?
Well, that's the thing that I found weird, right? Like, I'm up for the manager kind of dealing with stuff like that how they want. Like, if the manager's got rules for like when players are late, then those rules have to be enforced, right? Otherwise, everyone will walk all over you. The weird thing was that I kind of thought there was definitely a point late on in that game where I was like, Arsenal clearly need more energy up front now to help press, because Lacazette was getting tired, and just like as a counter-attack threat, like against 10 men. But the fact he didn't bring Aubameyang on, I was like, this looks like you were never going to play Aubameyang because you're angry with him. In which case, why didn't you just like not put him in the squad and put Martinelli in, who could have actually come on and worked really hard? So that annoyed me a bit. I was like, I don't really get the point of this. Like, Aubameyang, I guess, is just there in case we're losing with like 15 minutes, and then you'll forgive him because we need a goal. But I don't really care that much about it. Like, I think that players are going to take the piss like periodically. It's not great. Yeah. I don't defend Aubameyang at all. But like, you know,
I think it's good that he set a precedent, like saying, if you do this, then you're gonna,
and we won without him.
You won. Do you get what I'm saying? If you didn't win, that conversation would have been completely different.
Exactly.
I think he's lucky in a sense, because that would have just added to the agenda of Arteta being a dictator. And
he is a dictator. I've seen,
he seems like it as well. And
he loves it.
I get it though, because when you come into as a new manager, you kind of need to like stomp your foot and say like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Fair enough, I've not been in it for years, but respect me because I am in control of whether you're playing or not in it. It can go one way or it can go another. With Arsenal, you can see what he's doing. The style of football is much better. Your position isn't great, but I guess with better players, you can see that it might lead to better results in it. So I think that's why some Arsenal fans are being patient. Some are still saying Arteta out. And I see that side, if you're looking at it, that you don't have any right to talk to a man when you've got no experience. But I think fans need to realise that management has completely changed. Like, we're going to see a lot more younger managers getting roles like this, because all of the, like, okay, I've, old heads is a bit nuts in it, but like all of the older managers, that like Mourinho and Allegri even, like, they're all losing their way in a sense. Like, they're coming out of the game. Like, you need to kind of give trust to managers like Arteta, like the Lampards, like the Gerrards, and say, yeah, we trust you and we think that you're good enough, because I don't think there's an in-between. I think it's just the new managers. And I guess the managers like Moyes and them, man, like, what category would you put them in?
I mean, he's old.
Okay.
Moyes is old. Like, I mean, he's still a good coach, but he's old.
But he is old. But there's not really like an in-between. I guess it's a tough one, because
the in-between guys are like Klopp. Like, you think of Klopp as a younger guy. Yeah, Klopp's in his 50s.
That's true, actually.
Man.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Klopp and Pep and them, man, they're still quite young, to be fair.
Yeah, they're like experienced coaches, but they're not old.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, now that makes sense.
I guess you're right. Arteta is like the future of football, I guess. You are right about that. And we probably will win the league next season. Maybe not win the league, but we'll finish above Chelsea and Spurs. Like, that's the main thing.
No, I don't think about it. I don't see that happening. I think you've got a lot to do with your team. All this Odegaard hype. Yeah, he's a baller, but he's going back. Let's be honest. He's not staying in this place.
I don't know. I think Real Madrid will sell him. I just don't know if we'll buy him. Like, because I think he hasn't been that good for us.
He's been quite good though.
He's been quite good. But he hasn't been as good, I think, as I hoped and a few other people hoped. But he is a good player, and like But I don't know. Like, it depends how much money Arsenal have got, right? Like, I think Arsenal probably need like a winger or a forward or something in the summer, depending who they sell. But it's all up in the air.
Pepe's finally started to, you know.
Oh, Pepe's taken a little step forward recently, and I was like, "Oh, Pepe's looking like a £35 million player." Like, that's exciting.
Even Willian, he's getting a few assists here and there.
I think that's the end of this segment. Let's move on to some headlines before we end. Just some quick headlines, all right? So first headline: rumors suggest that Barcelona are set to sign Sergio Aguero on a free transfer at the end of the season. Reports in Spain say a 2-year deal is under discussion. Sam, yeah. Is this a good idea or not?
It's a good idea if Messi's cutting, because you know he's a goal scorer. He's played in La Liga before. I don't think it's a good idea to keep Messi. That's not one of those deals that you say, oh yeah, like here is what we're getting Aguero in, so yeah,
he should stay. Right,
like do you get what I'm saying?
We're not, don't sign his friend to try and keep him at the club.
Yeah. Like you sold my bestie. Yeah, you let him go to one of our competitors and they're doing well. So I think it's a good signing for Barcelona. It's a good signing for Aguero as well, because obviously he's not getting games at City. And I think Pep's literally just peeing him out of the squad, like making the squad kind of get used to not playing with Aguero, yeah. Which kind of makes sense because he's getting older and he's had a few injuries. But yeah, I think it's a good signing, but definitely not a signing to keep Messi in it.
Agreed. Second and last one. Pele congratulates Cristiano Ronaldo for breaking his record for goals in official matches as the Portuguese reaches 770 for his career. Which imaginary record will he break next, Sam?
No, this is so funny. When I saw him post that, I was like, what's going on? You know, what are we believing?
I know, this is like, I was like, as soon as it happened, I was like, this is like me, like, I don't know, like messaging like LeBron James. And being like, I really look forward to like when you break my record of 50 points, like playing for the Looney Tunes team in the Space Jam remake. Like, I'm so excited to see LeBron take my place as small forward against the Monsters. Like it was just so dumb.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, what? Like Pele, like what is going? Like just let it go, bro. Like you know what I mean? Like he broke it time ago. Like he just done that. Like I just don't get it. Like obviously, as an ex-player, you want to keep all your records, but at the same time, you got to realize that the time's gonna come when these records are gonna get broken, and you can either be that bitter person that like Pele was and say I've still got 600 more goals from unofficial matches, or you can be that player and say you know what, well done, you're a goat in your own right. And it's a pleasure to have such a player, you know, break my record and then move on. Like, that whole saga was just weird.
Sam, all the goals are made up in the first place. I reckon Pele got about 150 career goals.
don't violate. The Pele clan will come for you.
He's just a bloke. He's just a man from Brazil that everyone was just like, oh, you know, oh, like, I knew this guy who was, like, incredible at football. And Pele's like, yeah, well, I mean, like, I scored 50 at like my daughter's birthday party, and I got a double hat trick on FIFA, and like and now I've scored like 1500 career goals. Absolute bullshit, man. Sam. Absolute bullshit.
You're violent. You're I don't agree with everything that Pat said in it. Don't you, Pele man, don't come for me in it, because my boy literally loves Pele. He puts him in the conversation with Messi and Ronaldo in it. So you man that do all of that stuff, don't come for me. It's Pat that's saying all of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, Pele, myth. Absolute nonsense. thanks very much for joining me today, Sam. Is there anything that you'd like to plug before we say goodbye?
A little personal plug. If you want to jump, see my YouTube, you can go to Sam O on YouTube and see some of the content I put on there. For FD, Snapchat, we're reeling it out every day. We're doing stories that you don't normally see on our normal schedule on the YouTube. So if you want to hear some weird stories or some crazy headlines, to be honest. But yeah, if you're on Snapchat, go subscribe to that. And yeah, watch out for, make sure you tell a friend to tell a friend about this podcast, innit? Because we're coming with we're going to try a few different things.
Yeah.
And hopefully you enjoy it. Hey, that was a nice little end there.
No, it was. Thought... It just made me laugh. Hopefully you enjoy it. Okay.
I don't have to enjoy it.
You are right, though. Like, we are going to try some new stuff with the podcast over the next couple of months. We're going to have some different hosts. Hopefully we're going to have some different podcasts as well. So, yeah, definitely keep your eyes peeled for that. Thanks very much for joining me today, Sam, and thanks to all of you for joining us either using your favorite podcast app or on Football Daily Podcast on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the other one, because we really do appreciate that. Maybe leave us a review in the iTunes store. That's a thing people ask for, isn't it? Thanks very much, and we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Peace.